This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast. I'm Osoy Cardona, and with me, as always, is Kelly Dunlap, my wonderful co-host. What's up, Kelly?
Howdy.
Now, I think it's good that we're moving away from the fan club book club, and I thought we would move away from video games, but I guess not. So we'll talk a little bit more about video games this week. But something really cool happened this week in the world of MOBAs. What's a MOBA, Kelly?
A massive online battle arena.
Yeah. Do you play any MOBAs? I think we've talked about this before.
I do not play MOBAs, but as a savvy game person, I am aware, and I'm very familiar with some of the larger MOBAs, including League of Legends, which is kind of the topic for today.
Yeah. Smite is on Xbox One.
Yes. I have severe issues with Smite. mostly the representation of their male and female characters and the giant disparity between them.
Gotcha. But nothing necessarily related to, you haven't really played the game or anything like that?
No, but okay. I do have a fantastic picture from PAX East where it has a male and a female hero in armor. The man is like ultra buff and every inch of him is covered except his face. And then the female character, I don't really know how effective that kind of armor is, unless it's like if you hit the armor, it does damage, and if you hit skin, it doesn't, because that's about the only way that particular hero would be protected. So I have a nice picture of them side by side going, yep.
I kind of want to go down this road with you, but I think I shouldn't. So I'm not. So I'm gonna skip right past this, and we're going to go back to League of Legends. It's cool.
We can fight later. It's okay.
We have a very it's not a fight. It's not a fight. It would be like you fighting with Smite. It's not. I don't have a horse in this race. But what happened with League of Legends is interesting. So I don't know how much you've read about it. Did you do some research about, you know, different points of view? What's happening? Did you just read that one article I sent you?
I've read a couple articles just to get a different spin on each side. But I guess the first thing is kind of lay the foundation that we're talking about League of Legends, which is a MOBA, as Josue mentioned, and it is developed and created by Riot. So Riot is the game developer in this particular case, which is particularly interesting because we've talked about Riot before on the podcast, specifically with a panel presentation that they did. And I think we linked to it in the show notes at that time too. But basically, it was about the way game design can influence how players behave and whether they are good players or not as good players. And by that, I mean toxic versus non-toxic, or supportive versus non-supportive.
Yeah, like good and bad people, not their, the way they play. Yeah. And so they have a policy in place where they, if you, they have a terms of service, just like many online games do. And there's a thing in there that says if you have a name that is inappropriate, we will change it for you. Right, that's my understanding. And apparently last week, a lot of people who had apparently inappropriate names were given a new name by Riot as according to the terms of service. And in addition to that, they were given the opportunity, right, to fill out a survey. And if they filled out that survey, they could change their name for free, versus choosing not to fill out the survey and paying to change their name, or just keeping the new name that they received.
Yes, and it's important to know that this is a very common thing in the name-changing bit. It's very common in the game world. So, for example, in Halo, which is what I'm most familiar with, if your name gets reported and it gets reviewed by people on the enforcement team and they decide that it is, in fact, inappropriate, then they give you a randomly generated name, which is usually like Captain Salamander or Pretty Butterfly 09 or something like that. And then you have to pay to change your gamertag to something else.
Yep. Yep. And that's Xbox Live wide, right?
But I don't know if it's system wide, because each game developer gets kind of their own say in what they consider to be a violation or not. But of course, there's something like a gamer tag that is system wide. So the short answer is I'm not entirely sure, but it's I think so, possibly yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Xbox, and I think it's $20 to change your name.
It's something like that. It's not exorbitant, but it's also not cheap.
Yeah, and on the PlayStation side, they don't even allow you to do that, so at all. And I don't know what their terms of service are in terms of inappropriate names. There's a lot of funny ones out there, and League is specifically just really the only game they have. Riot, the only game that they have is League of Legends, and then other companies like Blizzard have a few different games. So it affects many different games, but Riot is, you know, League of Legends all the way. I think it's like over 60 million active players, I believe.
Yes.
It's huge. It's huge.
It's enormous, and it's probably one of the most popular MOBAs out there as well.
Yeah. So they were here in Madison Square Garden. There was a competition, and, you know, Madison Square Garden was, I believe, sold out for a League of Legends tournament.
That is crazy.
Yeah, I'm not.
But so the controversy that's coming around this is not that people's tags are being filtered or replaced or having to pay to replace them. That's a pretty common thing in the world of gaming. However, what is controversial is that this survey that players could elect to take appears to be based upon the narcissistic personality inventory. So a legitimate, validated psychological measure used to assess the level of narcissism in someone's personality.
And also another scale for aggression.
Like, yeah, adolescent aggression, I think, is the one in particular.
Yep.
So I've had a lot of thoughts on this, and I've kind of swung wildly around the fence on how I feel about it. So
in what way?
Like, every way possible. I've thought about it. I've thought about it legally. I thought about it ethically. I thought about it as a games person. I thought about it as a psychologist. So I've really tried to wrap my brain around it. And the first thing I thought of was that Riot is known for doing this kind of thing. You know, they have published tons of stuff with, I think it was Kai or maybe Digra or GDC. GDC, I think, they had an entire talk where they revealed the data that they've been collecting. They're very open about experimenting with the way their games are designed in order to reduce toxic behavior and encourage participation and pro-social behavior. I mean, they have a psychologist on the team, and that is one of his main job, or like his main job is to create a safe community. So my first thought is, well, that's not surprising, not really, because, you know, Riot has done all sorts of studies in the open before, and nobody seems to care. But this one is a bit different.
I what else? I'm curious. Keep going.
So the reason I think it's different is in previous studies that Riot has done, they've collected kind of almost observational data. So for example, you know, they put up text in red and they put up the same text in blue and see if there's a change in behaviors. So specifically, you know, if they put text in blue that says, hey, you know, teams that work together have this percent better chance of succeeding. And if when they put it in red, it was, you know, if you don't work together, you have a this percent chance of not succeeding. And what they found is that when positive messages were put in blue and like warning messages were put in red, they saw an increase in pro-social activity and a decrease in antisocial activity, showing kind of the idea that colors influence how people interpret things, which is an age-old psychology thing. We've known that for a long time. That stimuli, external stimuli, whether sounds or smells or sight, can influence the way we think and feel and act.
A lot of interesting research in blue and red in particular.
Yes.
That's a cool stuff there. Yeah.
Yes. But I mean, there's a reason that stop signs are red and caution signs are usually red, orange, or sometimes yellow, whereas things that are good tend to be more soothing tones. Like, well, I mean, the green is go. And if you look for things, sleep medication and things like that, they're usually in blue boxes or other like soothing, quote unquote, soothing colors. So that's something that they actually did. And they were able to show that when they put the positive text in red text, it actually increased negative behavior. So it wasn't even the text. It really was the color that was having an impact. And everybody was like, this is amazing. Psychologists are going, no, duh. But, you know, in the game industry, this is amazing. And it's really cool to see, you know, behavioral psychology being applied to the game space, because that's kind of our jam. That's a lot of what you and I are really interested in. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, how is this any different? And then I kind of dug deeper, and I realized that it really is based off of verified, validated psychological measures. And
not based off of, like, pulled directly, right? I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's 100%. I don't think it's a one-to-one, because that would be like copyright infringement. But it's the fact that somebody could look up and see where these came from, it makes it incredibly obvious that they were pulled from the NPI and the adolescent aggression inventory. And I think that for me is a really important line. Because at least in psychology, you know, there's an entire section dedicated to research ethics. And so, for example, if you're doing observational research, so you're sitting on a park and you're watching how people interact, you don't need informed consent. You can just collect that data. And that's kind of what happened when they were doing the bubbles, you know, about the pro-social versus antisocial behaviors. They kind of were sitting in the environment. They tweaked it just a little bit, and then they watched what happened. They weren't collecting personal data. They weren't asking personal questions. They were just kind of sitting back and watching what happened, which is, you know, to me, okay, that's totally fine. But the idea of giving somebody a psychological measure, a psychological assessment, more or less, without their consent, without their explicit consent, really, really bothers me in an ethical way. So legally, I think it's totally fine. I think legally they're in the clear, who cares? But as a researcher and as a psychologist, it does for me tread in this really murky area of, is that ethical? I don't know. I think it might be unethical to do that.
But it's optional. They don't have to do it.
What is the recourse if they – because, again, I wasn't able to actually define that in the readings I did, specifically about what the other option was.
So what happens is when they change their name, right?
Right.
Let's try that again, right? So they changed everybody's name. That happened. That always happens. The difference was that this time they received a message saying, instead of paying to change your name to something else, you have the opportunity – to fill out the survey, and if you fill out the survey, then you can change your name for free.
And that's another thing having to do with research ethics, is that coercive? Because if an incentive is coercive, it's not ethical. That's why you can't offer $1,000 for someone to go through a clinical trial, because that amount of money is seen as coercive. It's also the same reason that if you ever took a psych course in college and you were offered extra credit by participating in a study, there had to be an alternative as well, because one, a study can't be forced, and two, there needs to be, it can't be coercive. So it can't be do this or else. And so I'm wondering one, is it coercive to say, hey, either pay money or do a study? That to me seems pretty coercive.
Well, you also have a third option, which is just keep the name that you got and then don't do anything.
But you've also put a lot of time and value, presumably, into your character. And so even though financially there might not be an investment, the amount of time and dedication and status into that character, I feel like there's inherent value in it. So your choices are to participate in a psychological study, pay money, or lose your identity. And
but you can again, your name wasn't going to fly anyway, so you can't keep the original name. You still keep the character. You just change the name.
I don't know. It still feels somewhat coercive. Now, of course, if you've got an inappropriate name, then you know that's not a good thing, and you should definitely have it changed. And again, the idea of paying to change your name is not unusual in the game space. But I think the other thing that gets me, because the article in particular I read, the author said that he wasn't able to induce the state yet. So basically, he's had to take other people's names for other people's words for it. And so I really do wonder what people are told up front, because that's another part. Can you really give consent to something when you don't know what it is? Saying, hey, come take this survey. For all I know, it could be asking me about my favorite flavor of ice cream, or you know, my favorite color or band, which is a lot less, I think, personal than asking questions like, have you physically harmed somebody in the past week? Do you think that you are better than other people? Like, these are loaded questions, and there's a reason that only psychologists are allowed, who are licensed, are allowed to administer tests, or like at the research level, allowed to administer assessments after years and years of training and schooling in ethics, you know, for inventories like the Rorschach or the MMPI, things like that.
It depends on the state who can administer testing or not, but
I don't know. I really do feel like it is unethical for them to do that, especially if they don't debrief the player afterwards. Because like deception is totally okay in psychological studies, provided that it's kind of unavoidable, like it's the only way to get what you're after, and also provided that there's a debrief following it so that the person isn't like just left traumatized. Think Milgram and not getting debriefed after that and how awful that would be. So yeah, so those two things really make it, you know, I feel like it's deceptive, and it is, I think I got to go with unethical. I had a really good conversation with my friend Therese earlier, and she talked about, as a gamer, how that would feel like an invasion of privacy. Like, how dare you ask me these questions without my consent? And again, consent is not just saying, yes, I'll do it and opting in. Consent is fully understanding that, you know, what's entailed and the length of the study and any possible dangers, any possible benefits. Like, there's this entire process you have to go through to run a study on somebody. And that doesn't sound like that's happening with these players.
Well, but it's a survey too. It's not a formal, like, you would take that into consideration when presenting the results or when looking at the results later.
But I mean, anytime you sit down with someone to give them an assessment, whether it's the BDI, the Beck Depression Inventory, or something more comprehensive like the MMPI-2, one, people need to be a knowing and willing participant. Not just because it's ethical, but because if people aren't necessarily willing and knowledgeable about what they're about to do, they're probably not going to answer in, you know, the most accurate way that they can. So that to me raises this entire idea of, is the data going to be valid? If these players think that this is a way to, you know, get their name changed for free, monetarily speaking, you know, and then they're going into this, one, is that coercive? And if it's not coercive, you know, are they being told the purpose of the study? Like, that's, like, anytime you sit down, I cannot tell you how many times I've said somebody, this is the Beck Depression Inventory. It is a measure of depressive symptoms. This is what it's used for. This is the limits of it. And then after they take it and you review the results with them, you break down what that means. And there's this entire process involved in dealing with human subjects that it looks like has just been completely thrown out the window in this case.
Well, like I said, it seems like they're just throwing something out there. They can't possibly present it later on like, oh, like this was, you know, you can't sit it alongside actual correct process you would go through if you were going to administer these in an office setting, for example, or even in some sort of more formal participation. But yeah, but I agree. That's why I wanted to talk about this, because it brings up a lot of really interesting things. Really, really interesting.
And beyond Riot, the idea of analyzing behavior and using quote-unquote big data to understand what people are doing. I mean, Facebook is doing it. Google just hired the head of NIMH, the National Institute of Mental Health, to go work for them. So these giant companies are hiring psychologists in droves so that they can understand how people are behaving and figure out ways to get at what people want, how to design questionnaires and surveys and the like. So it is getting into this area of, you know, the psychological nudge. And I think eventually the logical conclusion is there really free will if we want to get as philosophical as that? Or are we just a bunch of, you know, machines that are being operated like puppets based on, you know, whatever psychologists say we're going to be doing now?
So where do you stand? You said you swung back and forth.
Oh, I think it's legal. It's legal, but unethical.
Okay.
Given the information I have, I would say it's legal, but unethical.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm probably going to agree. I just find it very, very strange, the reaction of I guess not strange. I think it makes sense, the reaction. I saw one article that described the assessments as creepy because of the type of questions that it was asking.
I have a list of the questions, like right here.
Yeah, so do I.
I threatened to hurt or hit someone during the last 7 days, and you can do like 0 to 6 times.
Yeah. So at the beginning it says, think about what happened during the last 7 days when you answer these questions, right? And then you can answer 0 to 6 times, and it's supposed to be within the last 7 days.
Yeah, and it just that's one of the reasons. If you were to sit somebody down and have them go through a psych battery, but not tell them why, and then not give them the results, you wouldn't have people taking psych batteries anymore. Because that's kind of the whole point. And obviously, they're trying to do something. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They're trying to do something to improve the service. They're trying to create a healthier environment for their players. And I can totally appreciate that. I think that's a very worthy goal. But there seems to be this gray area, this line between what is okay to do without someone's permission and what is not okay to do without someone's explicit, informed consent. And that's really the key word there, is informed consent.
Again, but the moment that they start filling out the inventory, they don't have to finish it. They don't have to fill it out.
But then that's where that coercive piece comes in, though, is that, well, if I don't do this, there are repercussions.
I'll
have to pay money to change if I want my name back.
To change your name. And you can't get your name back because your name was inappropriate to begin with. They're offering a third bonus option. They're offering
like a coupon. If I don't pay money, I am stuck with whatever name they gave me.
Yes.
So that is an ultimatum.
No, I don't see it that way at all. I don't see it that way at all, because before the survey was presented, you had two options, right? Well, you lost your name. Now you have two options: keep it or pay to change it. And now there's a third option. Hey. And again, I don't know if they're presenting it as, hey, would you be willing to help out the community? Or, hey, we think, that your name raises a red flag and we would like to gather further information. I don't know how that's being presented, because nobody's shown that. But now you have a third option, which is, hey, if you really want to change your name, here's a third option. You can do the survey. We'll essentially give you a coupon to change your name for free.
But that's the thing. In research, when you obtain informed consent from somebody, there has to be a line in every single informed consent saying that if you can withdraw from the study at any time, and if you do so, there will be absolutely no ramifications for you failing to continue the study. So for example, if you go in for a psych study and they're going to pay you $5 to do the study, and if you quit before the study's over, you still get your $5.
Well, if it's explicit up front, then and you know that you're going to get the $5 anyway, then it doesn't matter. But here they're telling you up front, hey.
But it becomes an or else situation. Like, finish this survey or else there are consequences.
See, I don't see it that way. I don't see it that way at all.
If you finish the survey, then you get this good thing. You get to change your name for free.
Yep.
If you do not change this survey, the consequence is that you do not get to change your name for free.
See, but the three options aren't it's like the three options aren't equal necessarily, because there were always two options and there are still two options, and now there's a third bonus option.
But that third bonus option has to do with the psychological parts of human beings. It's no longer an option of pay or don't pay. It's now pay or don't pay. And then here's this little thing over here that if you do it, you get something you want. But if you choose to not – I mean, if you just decide straight out of the gate, no, I don't want to do it, then I don't have a problem with somebody saying no. But if someone starts it, goes, these questions are really weird and invasive and I don't want to do this, then they started down this path, and then now there is a consequence to them not finishing the study. There is a consequence, and that consequence is that they do not get to change their name for free. As opposed to the first case where you could not change your name. That was totally fine. But there was no psych angle attached to it.
Yeah. You're framing it in a way that's not untrue.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And again, it's hard. And one thing that really made me think about is that I think if you were to put this into a psychology lab, it would not fly. It would not pass. Well, you wouldn't even be going through IRB, the Institutional Review Board, who makes sure that you're not like poisoning children. So
yeah, well, and that's why I think it's a survey and not a psychological assessment that should be taken, you know.
I have to get IRB approval for a survey. Like, I made a survey with my own hands. I made a survey with my own hands that had nothing to do with any kind of established psychological criterion validity to get ideas about who identifies as a gamer and who doesn't. So I'm not keeping any personal information. Nothing like that is being tracked. The questions are like, do you identify as a gamer? What is a gamer to you? So they're not even asking you about your mental state. And I still had to go through IRB for that. And that was a survey that I was going to do at VGU, which didn't end up happening, so I didn't do the research. But even something that simple has to go through IRB approval. And this is a lot more psychologically intensive than what I did. So I think if this was in like a university setting or in a lab, it would absolutely not fly. They would have had to go through IRB, the Institutional Review Board. However, they're not. They're not in those places. They're not in an institution that has that kind of oversight. So it made me kind of start to think about, where are the ethics of games? And I don't want to get into the whole ethics of journalism bullcrap, because that's just a place I don't want to go. But the idea of how do we hold game developers accountable? Do we hold them accountable? Is there a bar of ethics for game designers? I don't think there is right now, but maybe there should be.
So what do you think would have been the alternative if they wanted to gather some sort of information on aggression, on narcissism? What do you think they should have done?
I think they would have had to be – and again, we haven't been able to confirm that this didn't happen. But the if – you know, hey, you can do this where you keep the name that we gave you. Two, you pay and you change your name. Or three, you can take a 50-item study that measures personality traits, including aggression and self-perception and whatever you want to call it. And, you know, after 50 games, we'll reassess you with the same measure. You know, if you consent to this, here's what you know, go ahead. And because that's the other thing is that what if they're under 18? You cannot give a survey, no matter what it is, to anybody under 18 without some kind of oversight.
So it asks their age at the beginning.
And if they're under 18?
Yeah, it asks for your age.
But what happens if they say under 18?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just saying that it does ask for their age, okay. Which doesn't mean that they can't lie, just like they could have lied to create exactly. their account. But exactly. Again, but that happens with anything when you're not there. It's virtual.
Well, that's the thing with having ethics is that they can be aspirational. They don't have to. Sometimes they can't be followed, but you try to. But yeah, that's if I was to do it, I would make explicitly clear what it was I was asking from the players, how long it would take them to do it, how that information would be used, and what information in particular would be kept. For example, I'm still not clear if the information the player provides is kept with their gamer tag. Because that to me would be a huge ethical violation. Like, not only are you collecting information without informed consent, but now you've paired it with the identity of the person who gave it to you. So it's not even unidentified or anonymous.
See, again, you're assuming, again, okay, keep going, go.
No, that's it. I'm all about confidentiality. That is like my middle name. It's not. It's actually Nicole. But I think confidentiality is a really cool middle name.
That's what the N is for.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm trying to find the motherboard article because I thought it said that there was a follow up. I know that there was a whole process.
Huh? I have the motherboard article. That's the one that I've been glancing off of.
Okay. Does it mention anything about a follow up?
Not that I can see. I read it this morning, so maybe it changed.
But so I'm gonna flip it a little, right? And ask, do you think that it holds back the video game research in any way? The fact that there isn't an IRB-esque situation going on right now within the games industry?
Oh, no, I think it's just like psychology. Not having oversight means you can do whatever you want. I mean, think about the Zimbardo study, so the Stanford Prison Experiment, or Milgram, which is, you know, shock the learner experiment. Those would never fly in a million years. They would go to IRB. IRB would laugh and say no. So, you know, back in the Wild West days of psychology, we learned a lot, but we also probably screwed up a lot of people's lives, too. And since, just like physicians, the motto of psychologists is first, do no harm. We can't really do that. It's the same reason that video game violence studies are dumb, because we can't watch if people go out and punch somebody in the face. You know, we have to have them use hot sauce or blast loud noises to approximate inducing pain, as opposed to actually causing harm. So no, I don't think they're held back at all. If anything, it's helpful, because they can do whatever they want. There's nobody holding them back and telling them, no, you can't do that.
That's kind of why I asked the question, because it does put them in this situation where they're like, well, we can. There's nothing saying we can't do this, right? So let's go ahead and try it. I think that the issue – everything that you said is absolutely true. All those ethics red flags went up. But then because of all that, like, what could you possibly do with that information later? And because they do – they are a company that we expect – like, we expect them to, within 6 months to a year, you know, present at some conference on what happened with this. It would be pretty funny if it's just a big social experiment just to see how people outside reacted versus inside.
Oh, I mean, just one horror scenario. And again, this is probably way out in left field, but I would hate to be one of those players who had an inappropriate name and went through the study and then go to GDC and see my character and my gamer tag and my responses up on the board. Like, that would be, again, incredibly unethical. But that's the thing, is when you don't tell people what's going to happen to the data, how it's being kept safe, and what it's going to be used for, you obviously just don't know what it's going to be used for, and you don't have the chance to object to how your information is handled or used.
So League of Legends is a game that is completely free, right? To play, you can play the game and never spend a dime. You can spend money, but you don't have to. You can play at a competitive level and never spend a dime. And I'm not sure if – I don't know the terms of service. I haven't read a clause anywhere that says, you know, everything that you do belongs to us, including, you know, if you use an internal chat or everything that is written. I'm assuming somewhere it says yes. But I wonder if it says any other information or data collected by way of surveys or anything else. I doubt that. Unless because they are right, they were that forward thinking.
I would even have to challenge the legality of that. That's like saying, by signing up for this service, we own every thought that you have and ever will have.
That's an exaggeration.
I don't know. I mean, because it said in the last 7 days, have you done this thing? And if you get banned multiple times, you know, you could be.
They don't own your thoughts. They're owning the answer on a survey to that question, which may or may not be true.
And that's the other thing, is that I would imagine that they're going to draw on this for a presentation and talk about, you know, game design and psychology. But again, if you have people who are not fully aware of the kind of questions they're answering, are you really going to get accurate data? So, I mean, for example, if I was to sit down with somebody and say, okay, we're going to do the Rorschach. Let's just do it. You know, I'm not going to give you any information about the test or anything like that. I'm just going to sit down and do it.
Why would you do that stupid test anyway?
I love the Rorschach. The Rorschach, oh. First of all, Herman Rorschach looks like Brad Pitt. So it's like every psych girl's dream. Mm-hmm. But no, I love the Rorschach. But I mean, even something like the MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Inventory, which is really commonly used. Mm. It's – or any measure. If you're not telling somebody what it's for, they're going to have a harder time completing it, because they don't – and of course, the double negatives and reading level, and assuming that the person who's taking the exam is in English or is a native English speaker, because a lot of tests have, you know, you have to administer it in the language of that is native to the person. There's just so many things that go on with psychological tests and surveys that's why throwing it out into the wild like that is crazy.
Yeah. Well, again, that's why I don't think it's crazy. I think it's you know, interesting that they would. That they're just putting that together, taking those questions and putting it out there in this way. Because the results that you bring up at the end, it could be a presentation, but it's not going to be something in a peer-reviewed journal that's going to prove anything. So why do you think they did it?
Oh, I think they're curious. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have any problem with them asking those questions either. Like if they're suspicious that maybe it's a narcissistic personality trait that's linked to toxic behavior online, that'd be fascinating. The Motherboard article mentioned one of their previous studies and just the absolute massive amount of volume that they can get through because of the amount of people that play. Like it's a researcher's dream come true. Being able to have that many different conditions to try different things out, plus having a control group that's absolutely enormous. We're talking like 10 million people in a group, in a control group. That's enormous and not possible anywhere else. So I can totally see them geeking out on that, and I'm totally okay with it. What I'm not okay with is the people who are providing that information. It doesn't appear that they are able to give informed consent for engaging in that particular piece of research, or at least informed consent at the level that you would expect from somebody as a psychologist, a research psychologist.
So how bad do you think, or how far do you think we are from informed consent, considering that I'm assuming that at the very least there was an explanation of why their name was changed and why they in particular are being presented with this option.
Well, I know the Motherboard article did talk about, you know, if the name is offensive as in, you know, misogynistic or racist or hate speech, you know, just like your basic threshold of humanity, you know, Kitty Kisser 69 or whatever you want to call it. You know, if it's offensive, then they are notified that, you know, your name was offensive and we've replaced it. So there is that. So they at least know why they're being presented this option. But that seems to be kind of where the idea of informing them about what's going on stops.
Okay. And that's not good enough for you.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no. And again, if it was just questions in general about feelings, thoughts, or behaviors, I could maybe even let that slide. But the fact that they're going to psychometrically valid researched materials developed by psychologists to be used and interpreted by psychologists with the informed consent of the patient, and they just kind of lifted from that and just kind of ignored all the other responsibilities that come with having that kind of power, that makes me uncomfortable.
So I'm going to go ahead and not disagree with anything that you've said so far, but I will say, well, I did disagree with a few things, but as far as the ethics and the informed consent and all that, you're on point. But I do hope that they do more of this in the future.
again, like seriously, it's a playground. It is.
I would love it if it just became like, oh, you're a League of Legends player, and there's a joke about how like every five matches you're presented with some sort of battery of questions. I would love that. I mean, because they already have so much data, like just so much data, right? If they can see every single click and movement and every single strategy, and they can. And they're extrapolating information from that, you know, and they're coming up with all these crazy theories. And then on top of that, they have things like this. I think they should obviously they should also give it to, you know, it's not randomized, right? This is very targeted. Yeah. So, you know, for this to even be at all valid, they would have to just give this to people who haven't been banned, you know, to and everybody.
I would love to be able to opt in. I'm thinking with Halo, exactly. If it was, okay, you know, can we ask you one question every five matches? I would say yes in a heartbeat. And I feel like most people would too, especially if they're told, you know, we're gathering information and feedback about your play experience. You know, some questions may be personal, some questions may be impersonal. Just answer them to the best of your ability so that we can help make the community a bigger, better, stronger place. To me, that sends a whole different tone than, oops, you got busted, so now let's experiment on you.
Yeah. Yeah, this absolutely reads like, oh, you picked a douchey name. We just want to confirm that you're a douchebag.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they're doing.
It actually reminds me, unfortunately, a lot of psychological studies done on prisoners. Like, you're a captive audience. You really got no choice. So you might as well let us poke around in your brain and maybe traumatize you.
It doesn't remind me of that. It does not remind me of that.
That's taking it to an extreme. But that's what it reminds me of. If you have a very specific population and you're targeting that population and not necessarily affording them the ethical courtesy, ethical I don't know, behaviors that you would maybe give to somebody who wasn't possibly a toxic douchebag?
Yeah. I don't know. I still see it as like, it's open, it's an option, and they kind of, you know, just put it out there to see what happened. That in itself is probably part of the experiment, just to see how many people would even be willing to do it. And I'm wondering, how much...
We're part of the experiment now, too, Josue.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm hoping. and I mean, I wonder how much of it is even just how many of the people who change this then... I mean, ideally, right? Like you said, this is a playground, right? So somebody picks a horrible, horrible name. I can't even think of a horrible name right now, but they're all over the place, right?
I can think of many.
Yeah, I'm sure. And they're out there.
But that's
there.
Just because those are the people who send me messages. Let me clarify.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
because
yeah,
I
yeah.
get messages like that.
Yeah, that's the crowd you attract. For no reason, for no fault of your own, just for being, you know.
Female in a game phase.
Yep.
Female
yep.
in a first-person shooter's phase. Yep.
The audacity. And
I know.
So you want to see that. Give them something like this and then see what they do afterwards too. So not only the behavior in the game afterwards, but do they just exit out altogether and create a new, you know, and do they stop playing? Do they pick a really good name versus another really bad name? Are they like, did it have any effect at all? Because I wonder what kind of priming effect it would have to just present them with these questions. It's almost like, hey, we're Riot. And we think that you might be a little bit narcissistic and a little bit aggressive. It's obvious from these questions. So what are you going to do next? And in that sense, I would love to see what they come up with or what they see that changed in that environment. Like I said,
don't get me wrong. I'd love to see the data. I would totally geek out over the data set. I'm not saying that at all or that I'm above it. It raises this idea of is there ethics in games research? I don't really think there is. I mean, short of like killing somebody, obviously you can't do that. But you brought up an interesting point of, you know, give them this thing and then track what they do once they go back in the game. And to me, that's a lot more fair, I guess. It might be an interesting way of putting it, is that what you do in the game, like I feel totally fine acknowledging that what behaviors I exhibit in game are within the purview of the game and the developer, you know. So if I'm teabagging in Halo or if I'm doing whatever in League of Legends, okay, I if the developer says, hey, we're watching you play, okay, it's your property, you know, I'm playing in your space, I understand that. But I think it's stepping that boundary from going from playing and being observed in the game space to trying to get into your mental space and make assumptions about your play in the game space. I feel like it's another step beyond what might be considered comfortable, because that's pretty much been the number one response I've seen from people, is that they feel weirded out, they feel uncomfortable in some kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been on Reddit. I saw a lot of comments about it, and some seem to be like, meh, just looks like any other survey. Other people are like, that was kind of weird. What's going on with this? I think that it's interesting. And the only reason we know is because some people thought it was weird and they took screen caps and now we can see them. I wonder how often they do this in general.
Like how people just don't notice.
Yeah, like maybe it was just 10 people and they just happened to, you know, hit 10 people who had a huge megaphone, you know, and now everybody sees them. Because that's another thing. We have no idea how often they do this. Man, I want to talk to somebody at Riot so badly.
Yeah. So again, so I'm sure at some point we'll see the data set, and I would love to see the data set and what I'm very interested in what comes out of it. But yeah, I think I would have to come down on the line of legal, but at best ethically gray area, true feeling probably unethical, coming down on the unethical side of that gray area. But really cool.
Exactly. And
probably
super
unethical and exciting. But the thing is that there are ways that they could make it so that me, as the arbiter of morality and psychology, would feel more comfortable talking about it, or would feel less uneasy about using psychological assessment measures in such a way.
Do you think those were two good choices?
Oh, well, it's really kind of impossible to even say because I don't know what they're looking for.
Well, based on who they're targeting, right? On people who just using inappropriate names. Well, I think so. Actually, to be clear, I didn't say this at the beginning. It's you have to have an inappropriate name and be reported by the community. And then Nobody's going to report you for an inappropriate – most of the times they won't report you for an inappropriate name unless your behavior is also like problematic because it's so hard to catch you.
Or you beat them really badly and they're looking to lash out.
But true.
I mean, by choosing the narcissistic and a measure for narcissism and a measure for aggression, you can hypothesize that they're looking for some kind of connection between bending the rules, by having a name that's inappropriate, thinking that they're somehow above the law. Or that the rules don't apply to them, which would be on that narcissism spectrum, and whether people who have names that tend to be more aggressive, because typically names that are inappropriate are aggressive, or explicit in some way, if maybe there's a connection. But then what makes me think about is, well, that means if that's what they're doing, that means that they're going to have to sample people who don't have names that have been reported and give them the same measure to see if there's any difference.
Yeah.
Unless they're comparing it to, say, a baseline or a norm. So, when this particular measure was created in, I don't know, like the 1990, the average person, the average non-clinical population scored a 15. However, these people who had really bad names all scored in the 20s. Therefore, there is a difference between these people and the norm. But then that comes up with the idea of online assessment, which is a different beast than in-person assessment, mm-hmm. versus the norms of the age cohort that they have versus what the assessment was normed on. So if your average age is 23 and most of the people are taking the test are 23, but the test was normed, which is I'm trying to think of how to describe norms. Like, it's made for this particular population. If that doesn't match up with the population you're testing on, you can't necessarily draw valid conclusions because they don't necessarily mesh together. What you're using to test might not have been made for the population that you're testing.
One of the most interesting things I found was that Riot, as a company, once reported that they knew that a lot of the negative behavior, antisocial behavior that they saw or that was reported, they found it to be, from their research, to be people who weren't generally antisocial on the platform. They just had like a really bad day. Maybe they cursed somebody out or had a bad day in real life and it was just, something. It was like one-offs, right? Kind of these incident reports that they were getting. So it's interesting that even knowing that they're doing this to a very specific group of people, possibly weeks or who knows how long after they chose the name, which this is really just apparently based on the choosing of the name.
And that's a really good point, is if someone chose the name – and it is, say, 6 months old. I honestly do not know how long it takes for someone to get reported in League of Legends. But if someone has an inappropriate name and it finally gets reported after 6 months, and now you're giving them these measures asking about what they've done in the past 7 days, you having to make a pretty broad assumption that their mental state and their personality state at the time of the creation of the name has carried over to their current mental state.
Yeah.
And I mean, personality is one of those things that psychologists tend to think of as being fairly inflexible, that it tends to stay with you without your lifetime. But that said, they also admit that personality really isn't developed fully until 25 and can still be labile and changeable. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking at, say, a teen population, think about who you are as 15 and who you are at 16. And who you were at 18 and who you were at 19. Like there in adolescence, there's this huge developmental gap. So that's definitely a point I hadn't even thought of. And by focusing on people with different names, it might be showing their hand a little bit more. And mm-hmm. instead of worrying about people who had a one-off bad day, they're looking at people who intentionally went out of their way to subvert the rules or to ignore the rules. Because that's a very clear rule, as you cannot have a summoner with this kind of name And so they just said, well, forget that. I'm going to do it anyway. So as opposed to worrying about behavior in-game that could be influenced by a bunch of different covariates, maybe this is a way to look at people, especially, again, using something like narcissism, which is a personality trait considered stable and longstanding. Maybe that's kind of what they're looking for. It's people who think that they're better than other people, and they're using a narcissistic inventory to determine that. And then maybe being able to say, okay, people who use a name that's inappropriate, maybe that's an early tagging system. Maybe that's a way to identify problem players before they become problem players or something like that.
And then also there's a guy or girl somewhere who got 100 of these because they kept creating accounts over and over again with just stupid names. Because that happens too.
Oh, yeah. Alt accounts.
Yeah.
Alt accounts for days.
Oh, yeah.
but yeah, I mean, that said, we don't know everything. And so that's a big part of it too. But from what we do know, legal, probably not ethical, but...
Super again, exciting.
Yeah, super, super exciting. And I would be very interested to see, I'll be watching this, I guess, is a way of saying it. I'll be watching to see what happens as this comes down the pipeline. Yep. And as more and more large industries begin to experiment in this space, you know, Facebook and Google, like when people find out they're being studied, they get really defensive about it. So, and justifiably so.
Yeah, and not just the industries watching, right? It's that we have more data on behavior than we ever have before. And while a lot of it is digital behavior, we're now coupling that with physical behavior, wearables, things like that. And once you start putting it all together, Watson can do his thing and tell us all sorts of cool stuff.
It's a brave new world.
It is. It is super exciting. All right. This is a good talk. This is a good talk.
I was very passionate about this topic. I'm glad you pinged me with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see if we come up with something as exciting next week. This has been PsychTech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast. I'm Asoy Cardona, my co-host, Kelly Dunlap. And you can find us at psychtechpodcast.com or at psychtechcast on Twitter. We're here every Wednesday with a new episode at some point on Wednesday. And please join us next week. Any closing words, Kelly? Fantastic. Thank you, Kelly. I'll see everybody next week.